ministerial appointment ended in resignation amid claims of bullying. BBC News.
Read this evening by Alan Smith. Now let's look ahead to Sunday morning with Paddy O'Connell.
Live on BBC Radio 4 this Remembrance Sunday, we've the Ceremony of Remembrance from the Cenotaph. The traditional ceremony of music, the laying of wreaths and the veterans' march past, all before a new king. Faced with an undeclared war in Europe, millions will pause and reflect. We've historians, veterans and voices from the crowd at the Ceremony of Remembrance from the Cenotaph, presented by me, Paddy O'Connell. On Sunday morning at 10:30 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Now on Radio 4, we've comedy as Rob Newman continues his search for positive solutions to today's world. This week, he takes on the motor car with a little help from ancient Rome and 1980s synth pop.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome onto the stage Rob Newman.
Good evening, welcome to the show. This episode is called Your Town Made Perfect. For the next half hour, I'm going to explore how we might redesign our towns and cities for life after oil and to meet the United Nations call for a fundamental system-wide reorganisation across technological, economic and social factors to preserve life on Earth. That will take us to the end of the show and then we'll split up into small groups. As I grow older, ladies and gentlemen, I find I seek out silent places more and more. It may be one reason I do this style of comedy. In London, where I find peace and tranquility in the city is at the Hampstead Heath mix ponds. And after a swim in what regulars affectionately call the muddy puddle, I like to sit with my thermos under a swamp cypress and enjoy the silence. Except the last time I was there, the silence was obliterated by these two men with very, very loud voices, talking as they swam. And like booming bitterns, their voices bounced off the still surface of the pond. The coots, moorhens and ducks puttered away. The heron took wing and fled. Because I still had half a thermos, I just had to sit there and endure these empty vessels' endless blather.
Well, of course, the elephant in the room is population. That's the elephant in the room, population, too many people. But the greenies don't want to talk about it, not PC, is it? Elephant in the room, population. I don't think my Range Rover's tilting the balance one way or another.
Eventually, they got out the water and headed for their changing rooms. And while they were getting changed, the sun's rays began to pierce what had been an overcast day. And when they came from the changing rooms heading towards the exit and they passed in front of me, one of them said to the other,
"Oh, soon as we leave, it's going to get really good."
I said, "I think you'll find that's true everywhere you go."
What's your problem, buddy?
My problem? Your bumptiousness. Elephant in the room. It so happens that the rate of population growth has been steadily declining on every continent in the world for years.
Oh, so you don't think that people have absolutely overrun the planet,
said Thing One. And Thing Two said,
Yeah, you don't think that human population has gone way past the limits?
I said, no, not way past.
Ah. So you admit that human population is over the limit?
I said, yes, but only by two. The fallacy that human population exceeds the Earth's carrying capacity enjoys tremendous popularity. Untold bigwigs and celebrities wax lyrical on the theme. Allow me to quote a fairly representative example of the genre. Mankind has grown burdensome to the world. The elements scarcely suffice for our support. Our needs must grow more acute since nature no longer provides us sustenance. In truth, disease, earthquakes, famines, and war must be looked upon as a remedy for nations, as a means of pruning the overgrowth of the human race. This gloomy prognostication was written by Tertullian 2,000 years ago. Tertullian is the North African Christian theologian who invented the Trinity, that's the concept of a heavenly triumvirate of Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, ruling the cosmos as a job share in hopes that working part-time will free each of them to do more childcare. But whenever it's the Holy Ghost's turn to take the kids to the playground, other parents and carers become concerned that the children are on their own and say, excuse me, where's your mummy or daddy? And then the Holy Ghost materializes. Ooh, sorry, I was on the phone. Ooh. Weird enough that Tertullian was stressing about overpopulation in 210 AD. But what makes his remarks truly bizarre is that what was actually happening in the Roman Empire at the time was what the great historian A.O. Lovejoy has described as an alarming decrease in population. And this population collapse went right up to Tertullian's doorstep. In the 3rd century, the great city of Alexandria had no more than half its former inhabitants, says Edward Gibbon in Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. What caused this population collapse? One theory holds that people were voting with their feet against the Roman Empire's policy of low-traffic neighbourhoods, which had begun a couple of centuries earlier when Julius Caesar passed a law banning chariots, carts, wagons, carriages from the streets of Rome during daylight hours. This draconian traffic ban may have led to his assassination. Shakespeare certainly argued this more forcibly in the first folio of the tragedy of Julius Caesar than he does in later versions of the play. In Act 1, Scene 2 of the first folio, for example, when Cassius visits Brutus in his villa. Why, man, Caesar doth bestride the narrow world like a colossus.
Not only that, Cassius, but he's put all those stone bollards on the Via Sacra.
Tyranny just moves the traffic somewhere else.
It's the disabled I worry about.
Everyone knows that Caesar's family have got a lot of investments in the sandals business. Wheeled vehicles mean no one's sandals are getting worn out. That's what these low-traffic neighbourhoods are really all about.
In it.
So Brutus and Cassius assassinated Caesar. But they'd reckoned without the Roman people's love of the home zones and the Battle of Philippi, an earthly triumvirate of Mark Antony, Augustus and Lepidus defeated the conspiracy. Under Augustus, no one was allowed to drive through any city in the empire in daylight hours. Romans either had to drive around the outside of the city wall or walk through town beside their vehicle. Imagine if motorists in Britain had to get out of the car and push it through towns and cities. What a civics lesson for children that would be, even if this were only during the school run. To privilege school kids over cars in this way would give such a boost to children's self-esteem that we could start to be more honest about their paintings. The Roman traffic ban would have been even stricter had carts, chariots and wagons and carriages given off the lethal and poisonous fumes of motor cars, trucks, vans, juggernauts and mopeds. In 2021, the British Journal of Psychiatry published a paper called Association Between Air Pollution Exposure and Mental Health Service Use. The paper demonstrated a link between exhaust pipe emissions and mental illness. Fossil fuel particulates are hazing our brains. I predict that the day after we ban cars, trucks and mopeds from our towns and cities, we will suddenly come to our senses in one fell swoop. We'll be walking along the road and we'll just stop in our tracks and go, oh, Radiohead are not very good. Oh, I can stop trying. Clean air may clear our minds, but it doesn't, of course, guarantee clear thinking. Taos, New Mexico, for example, glories in the pristine air of the Sangre de Cristo Mountains south of the Rockies. Taos is a wonderful town full of inspiring people, but it's also a magnet for New Age spiritualists, only you never know which is which. And one spring morning, I was sitting outside a cafe, enjoying the pristine mountain air and the blue sky, and I dropped my cup and saucer. The crockery made quite a clatter as it hit the ground, so I apologised to the fella at the next table. And he said, and I swear these were his actual words, he said, it's OK, man. I have this effect on people. Now, here is where I blundered. You see, he didn't look like a mystical stoner, so I thought he was doing this cosmic hippie persona as a gag. So I just threw back my head and laughed and joined in the improv. Went, yeah, man, it's a force field I create by being so far up my own ass. And he went, excuse me? Did you just call me an asshole? My blood ran cold. I thought the only thing for it now, I'm gonna have to pretend that that is my real speaking voice. So I said, oh no, man, I'm talking about myself, you know? I was in a dream world, that's why I dropped the cup, you know? Away with the pixies, that's what everyone tells me anyway. They say I'm never in the here and now, but I always say to them, which here, which now, you know? Hard to get the balance right, you know? If you try to get into sync with what the man calls balance, then you're out of whack with the cosmos, you know? And when you try to balance both, that leads to labyrinthitis of the soul, and that's why I dropped my cup. Yeah. Thank you. And the fella was nodding along, and I thought, yeah, I've got him, I've got away with it, I've got away with it. But just then, my friend Marisa comes striding towards the cafe. Now, Marisa is a New Mexico native, but she loves to skip my quaint English accent. And from the middle distance, Marisa calls out,
why, hello, old bean. Would you care for a cup of fine English tea on this delectable morn when the lark is on the wing and the snail is on the thorn, my old china?
Why, yes, Marisa, that would be most welcome. My last cup fell victim to this gentleman's amazing powers of telekinesis. And the fella stood up and went, I'm out of here, man, I'm leaving. I said, I have this effect on people. Whenever the climate crisis is discussed on the news, presenters do the very opposite of asking how we achieve the transformative change the UN calls for and ask instead, what can we do as individuals? I've noticed it's not like that when other issues are discussed. The likes of Evan Davis never say, there's a lot of concern that sentencing for violent offenders is too short. So what can we do as individuals? With me to discuss this is crossbench peer Baroness Hatton-Jones.
Well, I always write to the prison governor to find out which violent criminals are getting early release. Come the appointed morning, I wait outside HMP Barlinnie, or Pentonville, as the case may be, until ex-con steps through prison gate to save a broad expanse of sky and the sweet smell of liberty. Then my shinty stick fetches him a blow above the left parietal, and he crawls back in pokey like a confused iguana.
Presenters reserve the what can we do as individuals question for the trivial matter of a habitable planet. Okay, so if climate breakdown is not to be solved by individual consumer choices, then what sort of changes would meet the UN's criterion of fundamental system-wide reorganisation of goals and values? Well, from now on, I'm only going to be suggesting positive proposals, practical solutions, and workable alternatives.
Positive proposals for practical solutions and workable alternatives.
Rewilding is one initiative that meets the transformative change criterion the UN calls for. Rewilding means restoring ecosystems so as to allow natural processes to resume, and often involves the reintroduction of plants and animals, most controversially, apex predators. Rewilding may be our best defence against another pandemic, argues the science journal Nature, since disease ecologists have shown that until their habitats were destroyed, apex predators controlled the fruit bats and mice that turned out to be vectors for the zoonotic transfer of viral pathogens. The argument you always hear against reintroducing wolves, bears, lynx and eagles to the British countryside is the disruption they'll cause. But they'd have to be going some to match the pandemic's level of disruption. Wolves and bears won't shut down every sporting event in the country. Instead, they'll just add excitement to many sporting events. For example, by picking off the slower runners at the London Marathon. If these apex predators thereby develop a taste for people in novelty dress, then they can also keep down the number of stag and hen parties in our town centres. How much more exciting will crafts be when eagles are circling overhead? A new event could award points to any miniature dog that makes it up the seesaw as far as the tipping point before the eagle strikes. Yes, yes, yes. Rewilding may lead to conflicts between domestic and wild animals, but such conflicts are perennial and are often solved by simple solutions. For instance, responsible cat owners make their pets wear a bell to protect the songbird population. This simple precaution of making cats wear a tinkling bell around their neck has not only helped raise songbird numbers, but can also help swell the populations of owls, hawks and eagles, for whom the cat bell works like the chimes of an ice cream van. The O Sole Mio of the woods at midnight. The green sleeves of the locked and moonlit playground. A fella said to me, you've got a very romantic idea about reintroducing bears. You imagine bears scooping salmon from the River Tay, but the reality will be very different. There's not enough food in rural areas for bears, so they will come into urban areas. Rewilding will mean bears upending wheelie bins, tearing through bin liners, scattering your rubbish on the street for everyone to see, ripping open compost bags and strewing chicken carcasses and manky fruit and veg all over the pavement, and they'll want to be paid the same as Veolia.
Positive proposals for practical solutions and workable alternatives.
Now let's look at energy. We usually talk about energy as a supply problem and ask how can we meet our energy needs, but many of these energy needs are not ours at all, but those of chain stores, foreign-owned businesses and institutional shareholders. It might be wiser to talk about who and what the energy is for before we decide to build a new nuclear power station or new solar array or what have you. On the subject of nuclear power, by the way, I did a gig in Whitehaven and it turned out most of the audience were Sellafield workers. Chatting to them after the show, I found them to be a very interesting group of people, the butt of whose jokes were colleagues who worked in the most toxic and radioactive part of the site's nuclear facilities known as the ponds, and who were looked down on by people who worked in the main site. Now, I spoke to a woman who worked not in the ponds, but in the main site, but even so, I felt compelled to ask her why she worked in a nuclear power station. I said to her, please don't think me rude, but may I ask why you work at Sellafield at all?
Well, the salary is very good, and I need the money because I've got 5 hungry mouths to feed.
That's a big family.
No, it's just me and Thusban, but he used to work in ponds.
I propose that before we even get to supply questions, such as can we supply our needs with renewables, nuclear or coal, we should first ask how we might curb the profligate energy demands of big business. To give you an illustration from my own childhood, my stepfather was a shift worker at an ICI wallpaper factory. He worked the night shift producing a vinyl wallpaper called Nova Mura. If you've ever seen Nova Mura wallpaper, you'll know why it had to be made under cover of darkness. Its designs were inspired by the patterns migraine sufferers see on the inside of their eyelids during a severe attack. Now, I once asked him why ICI didn't shut the factory at tea time like decent people. And he said it cost too much to shut down the factory. It was cheaper to keep it running day and night. If ICI switched everything off and on again, as per my stupid suggestion, then it would no longer be economical and he'd lose his job. And so all year long, those factory chimneys pumped into the skies above Stevenage a heady cocktail of what BBC lawyers will ask me to describe as essential oils and vitamin C. A few years later, the factory went bust and laid everybody off anyway. A few years later, the factory made him redundant anyway. I just enjoy saying that. I hated him. A few years later, the dreadful man lost his stupid job. A few years later, the factory made it redundant anyway. My point is that it is disingenuous for governments to talk about our energy needs and keeping the lights on when they mean 24-hour wallpaper production or keeping the high-velocity air curtains blowing all day with which so many chain stores greet their customers. Once we make energy a demand problem, not a supply problem, then certain solutions instantly suggest themselves, one such being the Newman Energy Allocation Scheme.
Positive proposals for practical solutions and workable alternatives.
Here's how the scheme works. Each town allocates an annual energy budget of 7 megawatts to just one high street chain store in each category. Under this scheme, for example, Superdry, Fat Face, White Stuff and Crew Clothing will bid against each other in the category of frumpy clothes with the consistency of ironing board covers. Here's another proposal. If you sell scented candles and half your customers arrive by car, then 50% of your candle's aroma must be petrol, spiced pumpkin and super unleaded, candied citrus peel and diesel.
Positive proposals for practical solutions and workable alternatives.
I'll tell you what else would help. And that would be if we could stop political correspondents from sounding like theatre or music reviewers. Political correspondents always go on about the mood music, the noises off, the optics, the stage scenery, the feeling they're getting. It all sounds perfectly delightful, but the problem with this style of talk is that there is no place for facts. The mood music, we're told, is that Britain is divesting from fossil fuels, when in fact the government last year gave fossil fuel companies £10.5 billion in subsidies. So if mood music there be, then it's surely the ragtime piano soundtrack to Pathé newsreels footage of the 1920s Texas oil boom. I therefore propose that from now on, every time a correspondent uses the phrase mood music in a report on energy or climate, the Texas oil boom rag should then play for as many bars as billions of pounds have been paid in handouts to oil companies in the last financial year.
The feeling I'm getting is that the government are very much trying to get people out of their cars. The mood music coming out of number 10... Oh, damn! Out of number 10 is very much a move away from hydrocarbons. It's... Oh, hell!
Yes, it's that great British oil boom bonanza, a madcap harum scarum dash to pump every last drop of North Sea oil. There's $5.2 billion in subsidy for company cars. Forget about the noises off. The big noise on the offshore oil rig is it's a gusher, and she's gonna blow!
Or in other words, the Paris Climate Accords are front and centre of government policy.
The freedom of the car, I argued in the last series, was bought at the cost of the incarceration of children. But cars don't incarcerate only children. A working mum today spends more time with her children than a stay-at-home mum in the 1970s. Not because she's doing more paper crafts and finger paints, but because she can't let her children play outside for fear of the sheer volume of cars, trucks and vans, so many of them with weirdo names that sound like automatic weapons: Raptor, Defender, Predator, Gladiator and Intruder. Gary Numan's song Cars presents the motorist as a lonely prisoner, but in fact the song has got it the wrong way round. The motorist makes children and parents lonely prisoners in their own homes. Let this Newman make good the errors of another.
Of another, of another, of another, of another, of another.
My license plates have personalized name and number. My car has a disabling device, the front bumper. My straight line from A to B is your short way to A and E. I am the jailer, incarcerator of a supermax jail made by Super Mini. The transponder of my Honda keeps you under lock and key. A dance craze called incarceration. It's a hokey cokey, the kids dance on tarmac. You put your left leg in and never get it back. I am the jailer, incarcerator of a supermax jail made by Super Mini. The transponder of my Audi locks you all up in pokey.
killer, incarcerator, imprisonator.
We are recording this series while the country is enduring temperatures of 40 degrees. The London Fire Brigade just had its busiest night since the Blitz in the Second World War, in part because of what is called the Urban Heat Island Effect, or UHI. According to the London Assembly website, the UHI can cause London to be 10 degrees centigrade warmer than neighbouring rural areas. This is a result of the sun's rays being absorbed by hard surfaces rather than by vegetation such as trees, plants and grass, and the cold hearts of people who live in the countryside. In the South Korean capital, Seoul, they have reduced the urban heat island effect by 4 degrees. How they did so provides a template for cities worldwide. Diamond saws, which create less dust, dismantled the concrete pillars of Seoul's elevated 6-lane city centre highway. In its place, the resurrected Cheongyecheon River now winds through central Seoul, lovingly landscaped with riparian plants, stepping stones and waterfalls to create what Seoul's mayor called a city made for people, not for cars. The 4 degrees centigrade drop in summer heat caused by the Cheongyecheon River restoration shows the resilience of low traffic neighbourhoods to climate shock. Another example of the resilience of low traffic infrastructure can be found in Pompeii. In the Via della Abbondanza, to this day, stone bollards can be seen, having survived the eruption of Vesuvius perfectly intact. The volcanic ash also preserved Pompeian citizens as well in strange and curious poses. There's the famous figure of the furious patrician who seems to be shaking his fist. And as the lava approached, he was thinking, well, I shall die, but I shall die happy, because the last sight I shall behold will be the glorious vision of lava sweeping away those hated stone bollards. Oh, for crying out loud! Now, the trouble with that joke is you saw the punchline coming from about a mile away, didn't you? It was like, here comes Newman with the punchline to that gag. I reckon we'll have time to take the cows up onto the top field before he gets here with the payoff. He went all round the houses with the setup to that joke, didn't he? All that stuff about Pompeii and Vesuvius and Augustus, all for nothing. With its inner ring roads and out-of-town stores, our stranded petrol age infrastructure has no more future than a statue of Ozymandias, King of Kings. Round the decay of that colossal wreck stretches a different future, one I've tried to sketch out this evening, a future made possible by diamond saws and Caesar's law, a future of resurrected rivers and restored biodiversity, where the last car has been cubed in the scrapyard and children have the right to play outside in towns and cities made for people, not for cars.